of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the third night of the Eight Nights of Christmas, Readings with Rick. It's Saturday night, and it looks like we will have a white Christmas, couple of inches of snow on the ground. If you're in this area, who knows, you might be listening somewhere that there is no snow, but I think most of you do have a fresh coat of snow on the ground. We've got some stories for you tonight, including maybe the most well-known Christmas story of all for the young kids. We'll start with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer tonight. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer will be our first story. Then our second story is going to take you up to the cold prairie of Canada. And in the 1800s, a story about Christmas. And you'll think about that one and just kind of picture that setting in your mind when we get to that story. So let's get started here with our first story of the night. And that is the great story of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Has that been on TV yet? I would imagine it probably has, but nice to catch up with a reading. So here we go with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Christmastown, also known as the North Pole, is the wonderful place where Santa Claus lives with Mrs. Claus, all the elves, and the flying reindeer that pull Santa's sleigh every Christmas Eve. Nowadays, Christmastown is a happy place. The elves make toys. The reindeer fly. But in the old days, everyone had to watch out for the abominable snow monster. He was big and furry and hated anything having to do with Christmas. And he liked to eat reindeer. All that started to change when Santa's lead reindeer, Donner, became a papa. "We'll call him Rudolph," said Donner, looking at his new son. Suddenly, Donner and Mrs. Donner saw a bright light. He's got a shiny red nose," said Donner in surprise. I'd even say it glows." Santa came to see the new arrival, but then he saw Rudolph's nose. "Let's hope this glowing stops if Rudolph wants to make the sleigh team," Santa said. "We can't have any shiny noses flying through the sky." So the Donners put a little cover on Rudolph's nose. Soon it was time for the new fawns to go to the reindeer games. There they would be inspected by Santa, who would choose the best reindeer for his team. At first, Rudolph felt shy, but soon he met a doe named Clarice. "I think you're cute," she told Rudolph. The coach arrived to teach the fawns what they needed to know to be on Santa's team. "First, you'll learn to fly," he told them. "You have to get up enough speed and jump into the wind." Well, Rudolph was so excited about his new friend that he took off with a great whoosh, and he soared high over the heads of the other reindeer. And Santa, too. But as all the young reindeer continued to play, the cover popped off Rudolph's nose, and it glowed for all to see. At first, the other deer were frightened, but soon they began to laugh and call poor Rudolph names. "Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer," they jeered. And the coach said, "Go on home. From now on, you can't join in any reindeer games." Only Clarice didn't laugh at Rudolph. Poor Rudolph wandered off alone. Soon he met an elf who was hiding in the woods. "My name is Hermie," said the elf. "I want to be a dentist, but Right now, I'm just an elf who doesn't belong. And I'm a red-nosed reindeer, sighed Rudolph. The pair decided to be friends and to run away together. They hadn't wandered far when they heard the terrible roaring of the abominable snow monster. It's my nose, said Rudolph. The monster sees it and is coming after us. Rudolph and Hermie were saved by Yukon Cornelius, the greatest prospector in the north. Jump onto my sled, said Cornelius. We'll run like crazy. But no matter how fast they went, the monster stayed close behind. Finally, they were trapped at the water's edge. Cornelius chopped the ice with his axe, and the friends floated safely away. They floated all night and landed on a strange island, where they were greeted by a puppet that sprang from a box. I'm the official sentry of the Island of Misfit Toys, said the puppet. My name is Charlie, and that's why I'm a misfit toy. No child wants to play with a Charlie in the box. We want to travel with Santa Claus in his magic sleigh, said a misfit doll. Otherwise, we'll miss all the fun with the boys and girls when Christmas Day arrives. The friends met an elephant with polka dots, a choo-choo train with square wheels, a water pistol that shot jelly, a bird that swam, a cowboy riding an ostrich, and a boat that couldn't float. We're misfits too, said Rudolph. Maybe we could stay here with you. But the king of the island would let them stay for only one night.
This island is for toys alone, he said. A living creature cannot hide here, but you can help us. When you return to Christmas Town, tell Santa about these homeless toys. I'm sure he can find girls and boys who would be happy with them. A toy is never happy till it's loved by a child.
That night, while Hermie and Cornelius slept, Rudolph lay awake. My nose will only bring my friends more danger, he thought. I must go off on my own. But as he wandered alone in the snow, Rudolph realized that he couldn't run away from his troubles. Rudolph returned to the mainland and headed for Christmas Town. But first he had to pass the cave of the abominable snow monster. And as he did, Rudolph heard voices crying, "Help! Help!" And Rudolph rushed inside. And there were Rudolph's parents and Clarice. They'd been searching for Rudolph and had been caught by the monster, who was about to devour Clarice. "Put her down," Rudolph cried, butting the surprised monster with his little antlers. Just then, Hermie and Cornelius pulled up outside the cave. They had followed Rudolph's trail and knew he needed help.
"An abominable snow monster will never pass up a pork dinner," said Cornelius. "Hermie, you sit outside the cave and oink like a pig. When the monster comes outside, watch out."
Hermie approached the mouth of the cave. "Oink, oink," he called. The monster dropped Clarice and rushed outside. At that moment, Cornelius pushed a giant snowball down on top of him. Splat! Working quickly while the monster was stunned, Hermie used his dentist tools to remove the monster's teeth. Back in Christmas Town, Rudolph told how he and his friends had defeated the abominable snow monster. Everyone realized that misfits have their place, too. Rudolph told Santa about the misfit toys. "As soon as the storm lets up, I'll find homes for them," Santa promised. And then the weather elf handed Santa his report. Santa gasped.
"The storm won't subside by tonight. I won't be able to see to fly my sleigh."
Suddenly, a flash of light caught Santa's eye.
"Rudolph," he said, "what a beautiful, wonderful nose. Won't you guide my sleigh tonight?"
"I'd be honored to," said Rudolph, putting on his jingle bells.
"Okay, Rudolph," said Santa. "First stop is the Island of Misfit Toys. Up, up, and away."
And with Rudolph leading the way, Santa soon found loving homes for all those lonely toys. "Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer," everyone sang. You'll go down in history. And he did. And that is the wonderful story of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Okay, for our second story tonight, maybe you're in a quiet place and enjoying a hot cup of hot chocolate and looking at the Christmas lights on your Christmas tree and settled in for the night. And let's think back to this time, 1800s, the cold Canadian prairie. This story is about an orphaned girl named Theodora, and Theodora sacrifices her one family memento so that her young cousins can have Christmas. What will Christmas bring? The name of this story is Christmas at Red Butte. And the author of this story is a woman named Lucy Maud Montgomery. And I believe this story was released or published in about the year 1910. Now, you might have heard Lucy Maud Montgomery's most famous story other than this. Lucy Maud Montgomery is the author of Anne of Green Gables. And she later wrote this Christmas story, and we're going to listen to it now. This is Christmas at Red Butte by Lucy Maud Montgomery. Of course Santa Claus will come, said Jimmy Martin confidently. Jimmy was 10, and at 10, it's easy to be confident. Why, he's got to come, because it's Christmas Eve, and he always has come. You know that, twins. Yes, the twins knew it, and, cheered by Jimmy's superior wisdom, their doubts passed away. There had been one terrible moment when Theodora had sighed and told them they mustn't be too much disappointed if Santa Claus did not come this year because the crops had been poor, and he mightn't have had enough presents to go around. That doesn't make any difference to Santa Claus, scoffed Jimmy. You know as well as I do, Theodora Prentice, that Santa Claus is rich whether the crops fail or not. They failed 3 years ago before Father died, but Santa Claus came all the same. Probably you don't remember it, twins, because you were too little, but I do. Of course he'll come, so don't you worry a mite, and he'll bring my skates and your dolls. He knows we're expecting them, Theodora, because we wrote him a letter last week and threw it up the chimney. And there'll be candy and nuts, of course, and Mother's gone to town to buy a turkey. I tell you, we're going to have a ripping Christmas. Well, don't use such slangy words about it, Jimmy boy, sighed Theodora. She couldn't bear to dampen their hopes any further, and perhaps Aunt Elizabeth might manage it if the colt sold well, but Theodora had her painful doubts, and she sighed again as she looked out the window far down the trail that wound across the prairie, red-lighted by the declining sun of the short wintry afternoon. "Do people always sigh like that when they get to be 16?" asked Jimmy curiously. "You didn't sigh like that when you were only 15, Theodora. I wish you wouldn't. It makes me feel funny, and it's not a nice kind of funniness either." "It's a bad habit I've gotten into lately," said Theodora, trying to laugh. "Old folks are dull sometimes, you know, Jimmy boy." "I hope you'll be a good, kind, brave man and a real help to your mother," said Theodora softly, sitting down before the cozy fire and lifting the fat little twins onto her lap. "Oh, I'll be good to her, never you fear," assured Jimmy, squatting comfortably down on the little fur rug before the stove, the skin of the coyote his father had killed 4 years ago. "I believe in being good to your mother when you've only got the one. Now tell us a story, Theodore, a real jolly story, you know, with lots of fighting in it. Only, please don't kill anybody. I like to hear about fighting, but I like to have all the people come out alive." Theodora laughed and began a story about the Real Rebellion of 1885, a story which had the double merit of being true and exciting at the same time. It was quite dark when she finished the story, and the twins were nodding, but Jimmy's eyes were wide open and sparkling. "That was great," he said, drawing a long breath. "Tell us another." "No, it's bedtime for you all," said Theodora firmly. "One story at a time is my rule, you know." "But I want to sit up till Mother comes home," objected Jimmy. "You can't. She may be very late, for she would have to wait to see Mr. Porter. Besides, you don't know what time Santa Claus might come, if he comes at all. If he were to drive along and see you children up instead of being sound asleep in bed, he might go right on and never call at all." This argument was too much for Jimmy. "All right, we'll go. But we have to hang up our stockings first. Twins, get yours." The twins toddled off in great excitement and brought back their Sunday stockings, which Jimmy proceeded to hang along the edge of the mantel shelf. This done, they all trooped obediently off to bed. Theodora gave another sigh and seated herself at the window, where she could watch the moonlit prairie for Mrs. Martin's homecoming and knit at the same time. I am afraid that you'll think from all the sighing Theodora was doing that she was a very melancholy and despondent young lady. You couldn't think anything more unlike the real Theodora. She was the jolliest, bravest girl of 16 in all of Saskatchewan, as her shining brown eyes and rosy dimpled cheeks would have told you, and her sighs were not on her own account, but simply for fear the children were going to be disappointed. She knew that they would be almost heartbroken if Santa Claus did not come, and that this would hurt their patient, hard-working little mother more than anything else. 5 years before this, Theodora had come to live with Uncle George and Aunt Elizabeth in the little log house at Red Butte. Her own mother had just died, and Theodora had only her big brother Donald left, and Donald had Klondike fever. The Martins were poor, but they had gladly made room for their little niece, and Theodora had lived there ever since, her aunt's right-hand girl and the beloved playmate of the children. They'd been very happy, until Uncle George's death 2 years before this Christmas Eve. But since then, there had been hard times in the little log house, and though Mrs. Martin and Theodora did their best, it was a woefully hard task to make both ends meet, especially this year when their crops had been poor. Theodora and her aunt had made every sacrifice possible for the children's sake, and at least Jimmy and the twins had not felt the pinch very severely yet. At 7, Mrs. Martin's bells jingled at the door, and Theodora flew out. "Go right in and get warm, Auntie," she said briskly. "I'll take Ned away and unharness him." "It's a bitterly cold night," said Mrs. Martin wearily. There was a note of discouragement in her voice that struck dismay to Theodora's heart. "I'm afraid it means no Christmas for the children tomorrow," she thought sadly, as she led Ned to the stable. When she returned to the kitchen, Mrs. Martin was sitting by the fire, her face in her chilled hand, and she was sobbing convulsively. "Auntie, oh, Auntie, don't!" exclaimed Theodora impulsively. It was such a rare thing to see her plucky, resolute little aunt in tears. "You're cold and tired. I'll have a nice cup of tea for you in a trice." "No, it isn't that," said Mrs. Martin brokenly. "It was seeing those stockings hanging there. Theodora, I couldn't get a thing for the children, not a single thing. Mr. Porter would only give $40 for the colt, and when all the bills were paid, there was barely enough left for such necessities as we must have. I suppose I ought to feel thankful I could get those, but the thought of the children's disappointment tomorrow is more than I can bear. It would have been better to have told them a long time ago, but I kept building and getting more for the colt. Well, it's weak and foolish to give way like this. We'd better both take a cup of tea and go to bed. It'll save fuel." When Theodora went up to her little room, her face was very thoughtful. She took a small box from her table and carried it to the window. In it was a very pretty little gold locket hung on a narrow blue ribbon. Theodora held it tenderly in her fingers and looked out over the moonlit prairie with a very sober face. Could she give up her dear locket, the locket her brother Daniel had given her just before he started for the Klondike? She'd never thought she could do such a thing. It was almost the only thing she had to remind her of Daniel, handsome, merry, impulsive, warm-hearted Daniel, who'd gone away 4 years ago with a smile on his bonny face and splendid hope in his heart. "Here's a locket for you, gift of God," he had said gaily. He had such a dear, loving habit of calling her by the beautiful meaning of her name. A lump came into Theodora's throat as she remembered it. "I couldn't afford a chain, too, but when I come back, I'll bring you a rope of Klondike nuggets for it." And then he had gone away. For 2 years, letters had come from him regularly. Then he wrote that he had joined a prospecting party to a remote wilderness. After that was silence, deepening into anguish of suspense that finally ended in hopelessness. A rumor came that Daniel Prentice was dead. None had returned from the expedition that he had joined. Theodora had long ago given up all hope of ever seeing him again. Hence, her locket was doubly dear to her. But Aunt Elizabeth had always been so good and loving and kind to her. Could she not make the sacrifice for her sake? Yes, she could and would. Theodora flung up her head with a gesture that meant decision. She took out the locket and took out the bits of hair, her mother's and Daniel's, which it contained, and perhaps a tear or two fell as she did so, and then hastily donned her warmest cap and wraps. It was only 3 miles to Spencer. She could easily walk it in an hour, and, as it was Christmas Eve, the shops would be open late. She must walk, for Ned could not be taken out again, and the mare's foot was sore. Besides, Aunt Elizabeth must not know until it was done. As stealthily as if she were bound on some nefarious errand, Theodora slipped downstairs and out of the house. The next minute, she was hurrying along the trail in the moonlight. The great dazzling prairie was around her, the mystery and splendor of the northern night all about her. It was very calm and cold, but Theodora walked so briskly that she kept warm. The trail from Red Butte to Spencer was a lonely one. Mr. Lurgan's house, halfway to town, was the only dwelling on it. When Theodora reached Spencer, she made her way at once to the only jewelry store the little town contained. Mr. Benson, its owner, had been a friend of her uncle's, and Theodora felt sure that he would buy her locket. Nevertheless, her heart beat quickly, and her breath came and went uncomfortably fast as she went in. Suppose he wouldn't buy it? Then there would be no Christmas for the children at Red Butte.
"Good evening, Miss Theodora," said Mr. Benson briskly. "What can I do for you?"
"I'm afraid I'm not a very welcome sort of customer, Mr. Benson," said Theodora with an uncertain smile. "I want to sell, not buy. Will you buy this locket?" Mr. Benson pursed up his lips, took up the locket, and examined it. "Well, I don't often buy second-hand stuff," he said after some reflection, "but I don't mind obliging you, Miss Theodora. I'll give you $4 for this trinket." Theodora knew the locket had cost a great deal more than that, but $4 would get what she wanted, and she dared not ask for more. In a few minutes, the locket was in Mr. Benson's possession, and Theodora, with 4 crisp new bills in her purse, was hurrying to the toy store. Half an hour later, she was on her way back to Red Butte with as many parcels as she could carry. Jimmy skates, 2 lovely dolls for the twins, packages of nuts and candy, and a nice plump turkey. Theodora beguiled her lonely tramp by picturing the children's joy in the morning. About 1/4 mile past Mr. Lurgan's house, the trail curved suddenly about a bluff of poplars. As Theodora rounded the turn, she halted in amazement. Almost at her feet, the body of a man was lying across the road. He was clad in a big fur coat and had a fur cap pulled well down over his forehead and ears. Almost all of him that could be seen was a full bushy beard. Theodora had no idea who he was or where he'd come from, but she realized that he was unconscious and that he would speedily freeze to death if help were not brought. The footprints of a horse galloping across the prairie suggested a fall and a runaway. But Theodora did not waste time in speculation. she ran back at full speed to Mr. Lurgan's and roused the household. In a few minutes, Mr. Lurgan and his son had hitched a horse to a wood sleigh and hurried down the trail to the unfortunate man. Theodora, knowing that her assistance was not needed and that she ought to get home as quickly as possible, went on her way as soon as she had seen the stranger in safekeeping. When she reached the little log house, she crept in, cautiously put the children's gifts in their stockings, placed the turkey on the table where Aunt Elizabeth would see it in the first of the morning, and then slipped off to bed, a very weary but very happy girl. The joy that reigned in the little log house the next day was more than repaid Theodora for her sacrifice. "Whoopee! Didn't I tell you that Santa Claus would come all right?" shouted the delighted Jimmy. "Oh, what splendid skates!" The twins hugged their dolls in silent rapture, but Aunt Elizabeth's face was the best of all. Then the dinner had to be prepared, and everyone had a hand in that, just as Theodora, after a grave peep into the oven, had announced that the turkey was done. A sleigh dashed around the house. Theodora flew to answer the knock at the door, and there stood Mr. Lurgan and a big, bewhiskered, fur-coated fellow whom Theodora recognized as the stranger she had found on the trail. But was he a stranger? There was something oddly familiar in those merry brown eyes. Theodora felt herself growing dizzy. "Daniel!" she gasped. "Oh, Daniel!" And then she was in the big fellow's arms, laughing and crying at the same time. Daniel it was indeed. And then followed half an hour during which everybody talked at once, and the turkey would have been burned to a crisp had it not been for the presence of mind of Mr. Lurgan, who, being the least excited of them all, took it out of the oven and set it on the back of the stove. "To think that it was you last night, and that I never dreamed it!" exclaimed Theodora. "Oh, Daniel, if I hadn't gone to town, I'd have frozen to death, I'm afraid," said Daniel soberly. "I got into Spencer on the last train last night. I felt that I must come right out. I couldn't wait till morning. But there wasn't a team to be got for love or money. It was Christmas Eve, and all the livery rigs were out. So I came on horseback, and just by that bluff, something frightened my horse, and he shied violently. Well, I was half asleep and thinking of my little sister, and I went off like a shot. I suppose I struck my head against a tree. Anyway, I knew nothing more until I came to in Mr. Lurgan's kitchen. I wasn't much hurt. I feel none the worse of it except for a sore head and shoulder. But, oh, gift of God, how you have grown. I can't realize that you're my little sister that I left 4 years ago. I suppose you've been thinking I was dead." "Yes, and, oh, Daniel, where have you been?" "Well, I went way up north with a prospecting party. We had a tough time the first year, I can tell you that, and some of us never came back. We weren't in a country where post offices were lying around loose either, you see. Then, at last, just as we were about giving up in despair, we struck it rich. I brought a snug little pile home with me, and things are going to look up in this log house, gift of God. There'll be no more worrying for you dear people over mortgages." "I'm so glad, for Auntie's sake," said Theodora with shining eyes. "But, oh, Daniel, it's best of all just to have you back. I'm so perfectly happy that I don't know what to do or say." "Well, I think you might have dinner," said Jimmy in an injured tone. "The turkey's getting stone cold, and I'm most starving. I just can't stand it another minute." So, with a laugh, they all sat down to the table and ate the merriest Christmas dinner that the little log house had ever known. Christmas at Red Butte. A wonderful story on the Canadian prairie.
Dreaming of a white Christmas.
Well, that does it for this episode of Eight Nights of Christmas Readings with Rick. Tomorrow, we're halfway there already. It'll be the fourth night. We'll have another fantastic Christmas story for you on Eight Nights of Christmas Readings with Rick. Good night, everybody. Have a great Saturday night.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.